Hello, welcome to CityWire Funds Fanatic, our weekly podcast looking at everything that's going on in the world of open-ended funds and investment trusts. I'm Gavin Lumsden, and with me again, the joining is Daniel Grote, editor of CityWire Funds Insider. Dan, I was off last week, and so I haven't seen you for a while. I haven't seen you for a very long time. I haven't spoken to you for a while either. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, how are you? How's your time off?
Well, it was nice and relaxing, but it was slightly marred by events around one of the stories we're going to talk about, because plenty to talk about involving two so-called star fund managers, Alex Darwell and Terry Smith. So if you're interested in either of those investors, do hang around. But we'll start with Alex Darwell, won't we, Dan? Because what interrupted my brief holiday, few days off at home, was the news around Wirecard, the German payments processor around whom there's been a cloud for some time, suspicions around their accounts and everything. The auditor, EY, refused to pass the annual report. And in the subsequent days and this week, the companies ended up filing for bankruptcy. And that's of huge import to investors in Alex Darwell's European Opportunities Investment Trust, because it held a very big stake in the company.
Yeah, I mean, we were
both investors for our pension. and so we're taking a close interest in the situation on behalf of ourselves as well as our audience, our investors.
Well, I mean, it was his biggest stock for a long time, wasn't it? And a stock that, you know, it's not that concerns about Wirecard just erupted, you know, in the last couple of weeks. There'd been, as you said, there's been a cloud over Wirecard for a long time due to some great reporting from the Financial Times. And, you know, Darwell had sort of stuck by the stock, and, you know, he doesn't talk a lot. He doesn't issue a lot in terms of, you know, commentary to his investors. But where he had been doing, it was, you know, it was talking about Wirecard, and it was, you know, defending his position. He said earlier in the year that he was sorry that his stake had become as big as it had, and it had come down a bit. You know, it was sort of around 17% at its peak, but going into the news that we had last week, it was still, you know, his biggest stock and over 10% of his portfolio, you know, because he does, you know, he has pretty concentrated positions. He doesn't hold that many stocks, and in the context of Wirecard, that was his most concentrated, that was his biggest. And so it is a huge blow to the net asset value of the trust, but also to his reputation.
It's a huge blow to his reputation. But just sticking on to the performance, yeah, the shares are down 19% over 1 year, having fallen about 10% in the past week, which is not surprising. And you have to go back as far as 10 years to see that his trust is top of its sector with a total share return of 276%, which is a really good return. And, you know, underlines the fact that, you know, he's referred to as a star fund manager. He's done very well through that very focused stock picking approach that he's had. But the past 5 years, he's sort of mid-table, really, because performance has been in line with his peers, dragged down largely by the controversy over Wirecard. And although you can give him some credit for getting out of the stock so quickly, so as soon as the news about EY and then the report not being passed and the £1.9 billion of missing euros, as soon as that broke, he sells out. I've got some reservations about the way that's been communicated, but I suppose the bigger question right now for us in this conversation is why he held on to it for so long. As you say, he really put his credibility on the line with supportive statements all the way down the line, and the interim reports at various points when the Financial Times were coming up with some explosive stories. You know, it's not a subject he's clearly wanted to tackle, but he's put his reputation on the line as saying, I know Wirecard better than anybody else. The management are really good. And, you know, these are, you know, effectively, these are inconsequential stories about a small part of the business. And of course, that's the opposite has been the case. It's brought down the company. It's a huge scandal, corporate scandal and regulatory scandal in Germany, because Wirecard was listed on the DAX 30. It's one of the top 30 companies in Germany. So its collapse has just shocked many, many people. And lots of people have got questions to consider. But just thinking of Alex Darwell, why I immediately sold the stake and, you know, my personal investment was that I was just so disappointed. I realize now, I'm criticizing myself for it, but I sort of had some faith in the star found manager concept, and that a stock picker of his renown, knew something about Wirecard that other people didn't. And it just seems that actually he didn't know any more than anybody else, and he's just taking maybe a big bet. Now, it doesn't, rule out his record as a stock picker in other stocks. It doesn't mean that everything he's ever done is poor or bad. That's clearly not the case. But my personal faith in him was shattered. But you didn't feel quite so strongly about it,
Well,
or you've just had other things to do. I don't know.
yeah, I mean, it's still in my pension, and that's not, because I've, come down on the opposite side of the fence to you. It's more, because I haven't got around to doing something about it. And I guess you do actually have a practical problem as a journalist with this kind of thing. Is the news breaks on Thursday, Wirecard up this absolute bombshell about the 1.9 billion euros that's missing from its accounts. You see an immediate reaction in terms of obviously you see an immediate reaction on the Wirecard share price, but you see an immediate reaction on the shares of the European Opportunities Trust. And so pick up on that, cover that story. If we're selling stuff, then we need to kind of disclose it and sort of disclose when we've written about it and whether we're going to plan to write about it. So in the kind of immediacy of the event, my focus is I've got to write this story. And so but by the time it gets to the end of the day, I think the shares were off about 5% when I first sort of filed the piece, and then by the end of the day, European opportunities are down about 12%. And you think, oh, well, I should have really sold at that point, but I was focused on other things. And that's actually, I think that's probably been the story for, because it's not the first. Obviously, this was the big Wirecard event, but there have been revelations in the past, and there have been share price reactions, and that's caused me to question my holding in that trust before. But pattern of these events has always been there's the share price hit when the news breaks. I'm annoyed. Do I do anything about it immediately? No. And then it comes back a bit, and then you just forget about it a bit, which is not
I know exactly what you mean. It's a funny thing, isn't it? We're kind of in our job as investment journalists, we are in a privileged position. We get access, we're following the news quite closely, of course. But actually doing that job of keeping up with events means that you're not necessarily trading on your own account, which is probably very good for sort of compliance reasons. It had been troubling me, and I'm absolutely kicking myself as a journalist. I don't know if you, it sounds like you are as well. The FT and Dan McCrum at the FT in particular has done a great job on covering Wirecard and uncovering what was going on over the past few years. And what was I doing as a journalist? Why was I not taking that more, placing more emphasis on that? Why was I seemingly preferring the assurance from a fund manager rather than a respected fellow journalist? I don't know. I've got something to think about there. But as I say, I got rid of it immediately. And in terms of disclosure, I guess that's why I'm talking about it now, just to make the position plain. But it was my reaction as a, I wasn't writing the story, unlike you, and I was just in the position of an ordinary investor. And as such, this comes onto my sort of gripe, really, with the way that Darwell's firm, Devon Equity Management, which he set up last year after leaving Jupiter, gripes with the way they and maybe the investment trust have handled the communication. Because Darwell sells his stake on last Thursday when the news is breaking about Wirecard. But the RNS, the stock exchange announcement, saying that the brief, very brief, one line explanation saying that the holding has been sold from European Opportunities Trust doesn't come until the following morning. But it doesn't come out at 7 o'clock when these announcements typically start being filed. And it isn't there either at 8 o'clock when the market opens for trading. It actually appears at 9:04, 4 minutes past 9 o'clock in the morning. That's 64 minutes after the market's been opened. And it's over 2 hours since the information could have been disclosed. And, there are bigger problems in the world. There are bigger issues in the Wirecard story. But from my point of view, I felt I was trading in a false market in that trust, effectively, because I read your story about what happened the previous day. And as I said, I very quickly decided I wanted to get out. And I did notice that the shares were rising, and I kind of wondered why that was. Was that a so-called dead cat bounce? I don't know. I was just keen to sell my stake. And when the RNS does come at 9:04, saying that the stake has been sold. Yeah, that doesn't change my opinion. So, I still would want to get out. But I think it's just, I just would like to know why it takes them over an hour. Why that RNS, that statement, so short, could not be ready first thing in the morning. It's you've got to communicate much better. Am I getting my knickers in a twist over nothing?
It did have an impact on the share price, didn't it? Because that was what kind of alerted me to that statement coming out. Suddenly there was this jump in the shares of the trust. It had fallen heavily the day before, about 12%, and it was falling in the morning. And that's a function of what was happening with Wirecard. Wirecard shares had kind of continued to fall, and I think the shares had already fallen by beyond the actual stake in Wirecard. So it wasn't just that, it was it was sentiment, and it was the discount widening because lots of investors were doing what you were doing and were getting out. But as soon as there was that statement saying as of yesterday we don't have any Wirecard, then an immediate jump, because that has kind of cleared, or it hasn't cleared the problem given what had happened, but it just removes that stake to that business that, where there's even with the share price fall on the Thursday, there's obviously still humongous concerns that have now kind of been realized about where the stock was going. And so they sold throughout the course of Thursday. You do think, given the length of that statement, that that's something that, they could have had out right at the beginning of the day. And then, you wouldn't be in the position, because presumably you sold just before the announcement came out.
Absolutely. And, I was going to sell anyway, but it just, I'm just, as a journalist, someone in the media is, we deal with PR folk and we're in the communications business. I'm just really like to know why that important piece of communication couldn't be there at 7 or 7:01 or 7:02. It's certainly there by 8 o'clock when the market opens and people are trading. I think people should know. I would be surprised if other people felt the same as me and were getting out what come what may. But it'd be good to know when you're selling that, Mr. Darwell sold the day before. Mm. I mean, it might have changed some people's mind. Anyway, but also moving on, Alexander Darwell has spoken about briefly about Wirecard on various occasions. But when it came to this crunch, this really big crunch, this is the terminal bit of news, really, there was no statement from him personally. I mean, you've got to remember, there was a statement from Devon. But you remember, Devon is, it's not a one-man band at all. There's a small team, largely composed of people who left Jupiter Asset Management with Darwell last year. But the statement came from the chief executive of Devon Equity Management, Richard Pavry, who used to be head of the investment trust business at Jupiter. He's the chief exec, and he puts out a statement. And, it's a fine statement as it goes, but it's not a personal statement from Darwell himself. And, the Wirecard stake is Darwell's. So it just feels, again, the fund manager is hiding behind someone else when, he should be standing up. I think he should be saying a lot more. But he shouldn't be hiding behind his chief executive, who he appointed, who he brought along at this for their small outfit last year. I think people want to hear from Darwell. He's the man behind that stake. And yes, he got out very efficiently, but he should have been out a long time ago. And also, we just need to know some sort of reassurance about how it can never happen again. I mean, he was supposedly talking to his board, the board of the investment trust, about how, he apologised at the beginning of this year for the size of the stake. As you said, it got up to 17%. And he was talking to the board, or the board was talking to him about how to ensure that such outsized positions didn't occur again in the future. But it looks like he didn't actually reduce the stake. The proportion of the stake fell because the Wirecard shares were falling. So
because that's sort of detailed in that statement that Richard Pavry put out on the Friday. I mean, some profit, it says, was realised on sales in 2017 and 2018, and that no new shares had been added since February 2019. So, it does sound like the stake went down from 17% to 10%, not because he was trimming his position. In fact, the most recent transaction he had with the shares, albeit over a year ago, was buying more of them. It's only come down because the shares have come down. And, I think you're right on the... I did sort of raise this with them when the statement came out that, it's a shame there isn't anything from Alexander Darwell there. And, the explanation was that, this is a statement from the company rather than, a press release the fund manager, the fund manager's made the mistake and the fund manager needs to be talking about it. I think that's what you rightly expect. And he's spoken he's spoken to the Times, but there hasn't been a kind of public communication in terms of, you know, an announcement to the stock market or anything like that.
Dan, did the statement from Devon, did it go into some detail about, you know, how much, you know, what level he bought at and what level he sold out at? That would be interesting to know.
So the first shares were bought at €9, and that there was a blended purchase price, so you know, averaging out all the purchases that were made, of well part of €27 for the holding at the date when the position was sold. So that was last Thursday, and you know, he would have sold those at, well, probably around a low of €40. So the shares entered the Friday trading above €100 and finished trading just below 40. I mean, they're now, last time I checked, at around 2. So, you know, the implication of that being that over the lifetime of his investment, which, you know, so we started in 2007, you know, he's not actually down. If you've got a blended average price of 27 and he got out at even at around 40, then he's up. But that's, you know, the NAV took a 7.5% hit, largely down to Wirecard on the Thursday. So, you know, that's, I doubt many investors are going to be thinking, well, I'm glad that he's made money over those years. You know, he's come out on, you know, he's averaged out on top. It doesn't diminish the fact that this is, you know, a big, big blow.
It's a big blow, but actually, judging from the comments from readers on our site, there were some people as appalled as we were, but others were more supportive and indicating they would stay on. And I guess that fact that even though Wirecard is, you know, was a, he should not have been in there, it was, looks like it's a fraudulent conspiracy going on there. We'll wait to find out. But the company's valueless. The only good thing is that he bought in low and he got out quickly, and there's a positive return. The other thing worth pointing out is that Darwall is also suffering along with other shareholders in the trust. He owns a stake of 3.2%. It was disclosed just early this month. So that 3.2% was worth £24 million a couple of years ago, but it will be worth a bit less than that now. So Darwall is sharing in the pain in that sense. But shall we move on? I think we've done the Darwall to death. And thinking of investor reactions, actually, there was another star fund manager, one who can still claim that label, although he doesn't use it himself. It can still be justly applied to him for now, I think, is Terry Smith. You had a scoop yesterday. You broke some interesting news about Terry Smith. It's got a lot of his followers and investors chattering. What did you reveal?
Yeah, so it's I found that the Fundsmith Long Short Fund and the Fundsmith Long Short Master Fund had both been registered in with the Cayman Islands authorities, and there'd been filings made to the Securities and Exchange Commission in the US. So yeah, this looks like, you know, this is a move into shorting shares.
So Terry Smith is launching a hedge fund that can short shares. And that's a subject that he's been quite outspoken on in the past. He doesn't like short sellers. Am I right?
Yeah. And he doesn't like any sort of kind of what he sees as unnecessary kind of complexity of any sort. You know, he's built his name really on this kind of, you know, this motto of buy good companies, don't overpay, do nothing. He sort of presents his investment approach that, you know, it's been, you know, very successful. It's one of the, you know, best performing funds in the UK, but he presents his investment approach as just, you know, a very kind of commonsensical approach to investing. You know, just buy good company.
It's a very down to earth approach, yeah, isn't it? And you know, it's backed by his years and his career as an analyst. So people really respect the forensic sort of approach that he has to sort of company accounts. And yet he combines that with a very straightforward and direct and, you know, a good communications style. And it's him, his authority, that's kind of on the line. That is what makes a star fund manager, isn't it? It's that sense of their personal decisions and their personal communication and their personal relationship with investors. So Terry Smith has got that writ large at the moment. So has Nick Train. and obviously Neil Woodford did in the past as well, until it all went wrong last year. Alex Darwell isn't quite in that. You know, he gets called a star fund manager largely because of his performance. You wouldn't, though, call him a star because of his communication qualities. And I'm talking not just about my grief with him over the past week or so, but longer term. You know, he's quite a shy and retiring chap, it would seem, bit of a reclusive. Anyway, we've moved off from Darwell, but going back to Terry, I guess there's some concern, though, isn't amongst the investors that this hedge fund. I mean, is Terry going to be directly running it? Because it could be something to distract him from his core job of running Fundsmith Equity.
Yeah, I mean, the honest answer is we don't know. There wasn't any comment from Fundsmith on this at all when I approached it. And so all I had to go on was, the filings that were made. And, the filings in the Cayman Islands just says, well, these funds were registered. The SEC filings, it's called sort of a Form D, and it's basically what non-US groups can file to give them eligibility to market their product to what's called accredited US investors, which is basically sort of very wealthy US investors. So it just, it details sort of the directors of the fund. Terry Smith himself isn't named in those. And so, yeah, we just don't know whether he'll be running it, whether it be kind of someone else, whether it is actually sort of a vehicle that's predominantly, geared towards garnering kind of outside investment, or whether it's more, about Terry's own personal wealth, and whether it just kind of sits in there and him or someone else runs it and picks out sort of bad stocks as well as good ones.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because on the one hand, if it is. Another kind of natural development of the Fundsmith business. They've got unit trusts, got investment trusts now launching. And it's another, from a business point of view, it's just another type of fund and tapping into a new sort of investor base. That could be attractive, but obviously that brings with, as I said, concerns that Terry might be overstretched. Of course, he might get other people to run it, like he has done with Fundsmith Emerging Markets.
You mentioned Fundsmith Emerging Markets. That's, that was his for a long time. And I remember going to events where, he would, it was an event for the trust, and he was saying, my time is split half and half between the fund and the trust. And this is before sort of Smithson came along. And the fund is huge. The trust isn't. And that always seemed a bit odd. So I guess, that would be the concern with this, is that, is he going to be running it, and how much time is it going to take?
Yeah, and also I was wondering, if he's not garnering external investors, but it's more about managing his own wealth, which I think you said is a possibility, then does that run a reputational risk maybe further down the line? I mean, Terry Smith, his business is based in Mauritius. That's one tax haven. And the Cayman Islands is obviously another. I mean, I'm not suggesting anything improper, of course, but these are places with low or zero rates of tax. And presumably, when you bring money out of these places and bring them onshore into the UK, then you have to pay tax. But, I just wonder, do you think there's a risk that this could begin to crack Terry's reputation in the way that, it seems other star fund managers, their reputations like Woodford's have just been damaged. His is intact because of the strong performance of the funds. Is that a factor, do you think, in some of the concern that's being expressed about this? Admittedly, not very detailed news at the moment.
I think the concerns are about performance. I don't think the news about Mauritius has been out there for a few years now. As long as he's delivering returns for his investors, that's. Look at the contrast between, with Woodford, for example, when he launched his business and money was flowing in and initial returns were really good. The dividends that he got from his business, they were written about, but people didn't really kick up a fuss about them in the way that they obviously did once the fund was suspended. The fund had lost a lot of money and people weren't allowed to get their money out because they saw, this manager's, someone's getting their money out, and Neil Woodford is able to get the money out of his business. So I think these kind of things, some people won't like it, but as long as performance is maintained, then it doesn't sort of provoke the kind of outrage that you get when there isn't that performance. So I think, and judging by the comments on Funds Insider this week, it's the concern is around the potential for this to distract from his flagship vehicle that so many people are invested in. So I think that's where the focus of concern is.
Well, Dan, I think your story will probably prompt a little bit more a communication and maybe a statement from Terry Smith himself at some point. I certainly would have appreciated that from Alex Darwell on what we were talking about earlier on in contrast. OK, well, I think that's probably enough for now, isn't it? Shall we call it a day and get on with the rest of our our job?
Let's do that.
let's go and write some stories. Dan, pleasure to talk. Hope to see you soon.
Great. See you soon, Gavin. Take care.